3:14, using the Holman Christian's Bible, for God speaks time and again, but a person may not notice it. So there is a possibility that God does speak through dreams and visions, and we just may not be aware of it. So that's what I found from that. Anybody have a comment or a question about dreams and visions from last week? 33:14 and 15, actually. So does that cover your question, Wayne?
Yeah, I wondered how you would interpret how that would play into Peter's vision when he saw the animals come down.
Yeah.
Because did that really go with what God had taught?
That did, yeah.
Did?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
But he says it does.
I don't know exactly word for word what that text is saying, but okay. But anything. Anybody else have a comment or question about it?
So if I have one of those aha moments and I think of something, it could be from anywhere.
Could be. You have to check but verify. Things what Ronald Reagan said. Mm-hmm. So
you know, at the time when Peter saw that vision, there was a lot of clarification going on from Jesus' ministry.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jesus tried to teach them things, and they were still, are you sure? Am I understanding this right?
Yeah.
I think they had a lot of good reason for it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, you know, the Samaritan, the whole thing with the Samaritan woman, that whole story is anti-traditional.
Yeah, absolutely.
It went so far against everything they knew, but they were. I think that God and Jesus were showing their grace and helping them understand, helping through what was certainly.
Yeah.
And we know we have record of hotly debated topics.
Oh, throughout, especially.
So, and we're so happy that no longer do we have hotly debated topics anymore. To pull a line out of Gary's sermon.
Gary must got hung up.
Uh-oh.
So anyway. All right, we'll continue our study in Ecclesiastes. We'll start back in chapter 5 and finish chapter 5 and go into chapter 6. Who did their homework? 2, 3? Oh well, the rest of you are going to be lost. Because we got a lot to cover, and I asked you to read it ahead of time because we're not going to actually read the scriptures as it is. We'll touch. We're going to dive into them, and we'll talk about them, but we're not going to actually read the whole text because we don't have time, unless y'all want to stay here longer. Don't matter to me. So as we go through here, if you're visiting with us, I think most everybody's been here at least once. Just jump in with a question or a comment if you have one. So here we go. In our sinful nature, we live in a kingdom ruled by wealth, power, possessions, and self. In the kingdom of heaven, we're able to see those things within their proper perspective and to participate in the larger plan of God in the world, all the while trusting Him to do what only He can do. Solomon makes a series of insightful statements in Ecclesiastes 5:10-15. Randy Alcorn paraphrases each verse, and I'll give you the paraphrase from Randy Alcorn. Verse 10, the more you have, the more you want. The more you have, the less you're satisfied. In verse 11, the more you have, the more people, including the government, will come after it. Also, the more you have, the more you realize it does you no good. Verse 12, the more you have, the more you have to worry about. Verse 13, the more you have, the more you can hurt yourself by holding on to it. Verse 14, the more you have, the more you have to lose. And then 15, the more you have, the more you'll leave behind. Money has an unusual ability to control us. According to Douglas Wilson, a man may work hard to acquire money only to discover at the end of the day that the money has actually acquired him. John D. Rockefeller was once asked, how much money is enough? And he famously answered, just a little bit more. Chuck Swindoll says, money can buy us tons of comfort, but not an ounce of contentment. So when it comes to wealth and possessions, we will always want more under the sun, but fulfillment can only be found beyond the sun. One of the fascinating realities of the Bible is that there is never a place where possessing wealth, even great wealth, is forbidden. While Jesus declared that the poor would be blessed, he was referring to the poor in spirit in Matthew 5:3, not income. The issue clearly isn't wealth, it's our attitude toward wealth. And what does 1 Timothy 6:10 say? I'm sorry, that was a question. For money is a root of all kinds of evil.
No.
No.
For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. I'm like Erie, I have to make sure you're awake every once in a while. So in chapter 6, Solomon reminds us of the vanity of work. That's not to say that we shouldn't work. We should do our best in our work and not make our work our life's purpose, because this also is vanity. Any questions or comments? All right, we're going to go straight into the questions. So what does Ecclesiastes 5:8-9 say about the treatment of the poor and corruption in government? Okay, what does it say first? What's the first part of verse 8? Don't be surprised. That's what I'm looking for. Don't be surprised. A poor person being oppressed by the powerful, every official is under orders from higher up. In other words, don't be surprised if the oppressed are oppressed more, but don't worry about your official because he has someone over him telling him what to do. So it's kind of a chain reaction.
Always a bigger fish.
Always a bigger fish. Yep.
Star Wars.
What is the danger of losing money? I'm sorry, loving money. What is the danger of loving money and why?
It can only serve one master.
Okay. And what else?
Never have enough.
You're never satisfied. And our favorite word for Ecclesiastes is it's vanity or futility, right? Or meaningless, depends on your translation. So what happens as prosperity increases in verse 11? Do what? You'll want more? The more...
The rich don't sleep.
Okay, we're going to get to the rich in just a second. Bob's got it. Bob's right on track. You'll want more. In other words, the more you make, the more you spend, right? Generally.
The more there are to take it from you.
And Uncle Sam likes to get his share.
That's not what Dave Ramsey says. The more you have, the more you give away.
That's what you should do with it. Yeah, that's what you should do with it. Yeah.
Well, then that makes somebody else happy.
Make somebody else what?
Have more.
Oh. Well, depending on who you, yeah. If you give it to someone who needs it, then that's fine.
But even Dave Ramsey has friends that wouldn't be his friends if he wasn't in the position he is now. He says that.
Yeah,
it's
funny about that. Yep. So what does not allow a rich person to sleep well? Deborah's touched on it. Wealth or abundance, verse 12. Look at verse 12. Is there a contradiction here? This is New American Standard. The sleep of the working man is pleasant, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich man does not allow him to sleep. In other words, I guess the working man can sleep well on the full stomach, but a rich man cannot. Is that what it's saying?
Rich man has rich food. He ate too much. He doesn't feel good.
He overdid it. Is that what you're saying?
How many times have you walked away from the table and said, oh, like?
Wow. Most days I do that at least once.
To me, I think it's more about the contentment of the two stages in life.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of whether they're full or not. It's that the laborer is content that he's had something to eat and now he can sleep. Whereas the rich man is even though he's had something,
protecting what he has and getting more tomorrow.
Yeah.
And the laborer says, oh, I'm grateful. I got something to eat. Now I can go to sleep.
Yeah.
It's a contentment mindset.
Right. And there is some contentment, or should be some contentment, and I know this is hard to see sometimes, but when we do work and we accomplish a goal, and you know, we come back and we can sit down in our recliner and just say, ah, you know, I did it, it's finished, or whatever. Where the rich man, he's directing orders. He's just sitting around telling other people what to do. So any comments? Questions about that?
From the flip side of money, Romans 12 says it's a gift.
Yeah.
And it's a gift if you use it properly, and it says to be liberal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So money is not necessarily a curse.
Correct. It's our, like I said, it's the attitude toward it. Kevin?
Yeah, I think about worry is coming into play. And I think, you know, when you have a lot, kind of depend on it.
Yeah.
And then if you depend on it, you worry about it.
Yeah.
You're going to lose it.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? And so I think about the course, Jesus' words that don't worry. And if you don't have anything, I mean, yeah, you might worry about your next meal, but when you get it, you're pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, it drives me back to what am I depending on?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's money, yeah, I'm going to have a hard time sleeping at night.
Aren't we told that God will provide for those who love Him? So,
you worship one or the other.
Exactly, yeah. Wayne, you have your hand up, or you just... Okay. Anybody else?
Lynn?
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
I think that I'm probably the richest man in this room.
All right.
Janice do all the worrying.
Those of us that know them, the answer to that is
amen. Exactly. And they leave Tuesday. You leave on Tuesday on your cruise, right? John?
Trip.
Tuesday. On your flight. Have you still got a pilot? Have we found out yet? As far as you know, you have a pilot.
Yeah. You don't find out till you get there.
I have a good friend that's a stewardess for Delta, but I don't think she goes international, so she won't help you. So, number five, how does Solomon view hoarding wealth in verse 13? What does he call it?
Harmful?
Grievous evil? Yeah, it does. We see this, he uses this term grievous evil in both verse 13 and then later in verse 16, which we'll cover when we get to number 9 here. So what does hoarding tell you about a person? We got TV shows about people hoarding. What does that tell you about those people?
Basically, it points toward insecurity.
Exactly. And I put down, they have no faith in God to provide. So... I know we don't have anybody in here that are hoarders.
The only reason I'm not is because I'm married to Jennifer.
Are you?
And remember, it's not hoarding if it's books.
It's books. What, Wayne?
I'm just going to say, a lot of times you just keep things in case somebody needs them.
Oh, exactly.
Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my philosophy. You know, if I already have a dozen of them, I don't need to go out. I won't have to go out and buy one later.
Yeah, but if you're a hoarder, you don't even know how many.
You don't.
You can't find it, so you go buy another one.
Yeah. And most of the TV shows, they're not true hoarders. They're just junk. They just don't throw anything away. I mean, food, trash, and everything. That's...
But hoarding's also the opposite of what you're talking about as far as generosity.
Yeah.
And that's a selfishness.
Yeah. So, Christy, how many times do you read a book more than twice?
More than twice?
Yeah.
Besides
Oh, those are the ones you need to give away. Generally, most people do not read a book more than twice.
What if you don't even read it once?
I was just going to say that if it's shoes, it's not hoarding.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yes. Wear them more than twice.
Yes.
For you or Kevin?
I think we need to cut this conversation off.
I've been living on only 5 pairs for the last 3 months because I had to pack them all.
Oh, okay. So number 7, what happens when the rich man loses his wealth through bad luck? What did verse 14 say about that?
Left nothing for his kids.
Yeah, he doesn't leave anything. Are we told to leave an inheritance for our children? Is that scriptural?
No, it's not really.
That's not.
But that hasn't stopped me from hearing some sermons.
Yeah.
Basically are saying we should leave an inheritance for our children, that it's God's law.
Yeah.
That's a stretch.
Yeah.
Hopefully our inheritance for our children is their love of Jesus.
Yeah, exactly.
As they saw through us.
Yeah. That's the most important inheritance. So.
You work a lot, no inheritance.
Yeah.
With Jennifer around, our boys will be lucky to inherit anything.
Yeah, but if you ever go to an estate sale and see all the personal items they're selling that the family doesn't want. So how is a man born and how will he leave this life? Verse 15. Came into the world naked, he'll go out naked. So how does verses 15 and 16 inform us about our personal attitude toward wealth? And the little bit we do have, what do we do about it? What can we do about it?
Give it away or not take it with you.
You can't take it with you. What 15 and 16 says.
There are ways that you can store up heaven, store up treasure.
Well, yeah, but they're not material things, right?
Yeah, if you're giving of your treasures to something, that's a way to store it up.
You will not be able to take anything material with you. I mean, the pharaohs, they're buried with all this gold and stuff, and they find the thing and it's still there, all the gold's still there. Vaughn?
I think what Wayne is talking about is the use of the store for yourself treasures in heaven.
Yeah.
Give to the poor.
Yeah.
And that's what Wayne is talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, we can earn stuff to take to heaven, but it's not materialistic. Number 10, according to Ecclesiastes 5:18, what attitude should one have toward his or her labor? You okay, Bob?
No.
What you need?
Find satisfaction.
No, thank you very much.
Okay, I'm sorry. Verse 18, what attitude should one have toward his or her labor?
Find satisfaction.
One couple of translations say reward. I think that's New American Standard says reward.
Yeah.
Okay.
So often we hear people, oh,
yeah.
And it's just like everything else. Well, you have a choice. You can find the good in anything.
Yeah. Or find a
breath in the morning and job in the day.
Yeah.
They can pay you so you can eat at night.
I wrote down physical work equals physical reward, spiritual work equals spiritual reward. So what did Solomon consider a gift from God in verse 19? Verse 19. Wealth is one.
Ability to enjoy it.
Accept your lot in life. How about good health? Doesn't he talk about good health? And enjoy your work. That's New Living uses those phrases. So why does a person not worry about how short life is? Yep. God keeps such people so busy enjoying life that they take no time to brood over the past.
You know, as far as people living, a lot of folks live a long time.
Yeah.
Solomon did. He wasn't in the 600 years old club, you know.
Do we know how old he was when he died?
You can read different things. Some as early as in his 50s, and the latest I've seen is close to 100.
Oh, really?
95.
But, yeah.
Josephus, I think, said something.
Okay.
About how old he was. But he wasn't extremely old from what we know.
Yeah. Well, 700 wives will wear you out.
You reckon?
Ecclesiastes 6, 1 and 2, what were the three things God gave this man? What?
Wealth.
What? Honor? And one, and something else?
No lack of.
No lack of anything or everything they could want or he could want. So what does the preacher or Solomon say God did not give this man?
The ability to enjoy them.
Oh.
That's back to that choice.
Yeah. He doesn't give them the chance to enjoy these things. So God blesses this man with the wealth, honor, and everything that he wanted.
Now, wait a minute. What, you said the chance? No, God does not grant the ability.
He doesn't give them the chance to enjoy these things. Yeah, okay. This is New Living.
Yeah, that just seems odd because he does give them a chance to choose to enjoy them. Am I misunderstanding?
Could be. We could be different here. New Living says, verse 2, God gives some people great wealth and honor and everything they could ever want, but then he doesn't give them the chance to enjoy these things.
Okay, he doesn't give them.
Yeah.
They have to take that on themselves.
Yeah. They die, and the verse continues, they die and someone else, even a stranger, ends up enjoying their wealth.
Okay.
Okay? Anybody else have a question or a comment?
It's kind of like having a boat.
Break out another 1,000.
The owner has to take care of it, maintain it.
But his friends.
Everybody's looking at Harry.
Yes, that's true.
Well, that's like when I was growing up, we didn't have a pickup truck, but our friends had a pickup truck, and we would borrow their pickup truck, you know, to haul something, so... So who is better off than a man who finds no satisfaction in life and doesn't even get a decent burial? And I apologize, this may be tough, but we're just reading the scripture. Yeah, a baby that is born dead. So how is a stillborn child better than one who suffers such an affliction?
They're automatically in the hands of God.
Exactly. And what other thing? I mean, that's the main thing, David. I agree with you there.
They never see suffering.
Exactly. They do not see the sun nor the turmoil of this life. So what is the outcome for the man who lives to be 2,000 years old but does not learn to enjoy good things? Verse 6.
He's still going to die.
Yeah, he's still going to die like everyone else. So it's sort of like, what's the use? Yes, ma'am.
So, that thing on the proper burial, what are the things, what does the Bible say about the proper burial?
What are you referencing?
It was the last question.
About the stillborn baby?
Verse 3, where it talks about receiving the proper burial.
In NIV.
Okay. Then let me.
He may have 100 children and live many years, yet no matter how long he lives, he cannot enjoy his prosperity and does not receive proper burial I say that a stillborn child is better off.
Well, yeah, but King Jehoiakim died unlamented and dishonored. So that's part of what, you know, your family, I mean, people that knew you, people that benefit from that wealth, dishonor you and don't lament your passing of death. You really have been, even if you're under the ground, you still have been poorly buried because you were so much of a pain in the neck that nobody wanted to be around you anyway. So.
I think the proper burial is more of what people say about you when you die.
Yeah.
You know, like the, what do you call that?
Eulogy. Yeah.
But I think that's what it's more talking about there, seeing the proper burial. I don't think the Bible tells you that you have to have a tombstone.
No. Yeah.
I mean,
what translation are you reading from?
NIV.
Well, I got American Standard.
Because when we were in Salt Lake City and we went and did the little tour thing or what, I mean, of course, the Mormons, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're like, oh, no, you have to be facing in this direction.
Yeah.
Have to be and then the term Christian burial, which, you know, you come across and it seems like that now cremation is much more, at least to me, more common.
Yeah.
And I just wondered about that, if that was referencing that or if there's anything else.
Reason I asked you what translation, because New American Standard, the word proper is in italics. It's used sometimes when words are in italics, it means they're not from the original. So.
There were Levitical laws in the area.
There was, yeah.
But this, I don't think it's referencing that as much.
Yeah.
It's probably just more, you know, joyous prosperity and then people have good things to say about it.
Yeah.
I read yesterday some guy died. He was very mean. Family did not like it. And they had him cremated and put his ashes in the cat's litter box. That's what they thought of it. They felt good about it.
Oh, wow.
Jeremiah tells us, he said, they will not mourn he comes.
Yeah.
And that he will have a burial of a donkey and dragged away and thrown outside the gates of Jerusalem.
Gary, haven't you mentioned before in your chaplaincy situations, you were sometimes you'd be the only person at a funeral? Are you the one who said that?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, the honor guard and myself, the funeral director,
yeah.
Was one time that we were on, no family came.
Yeah.
We were in.
Yeah, that's sad. Yeah. Yeah.
So
has a bunch.
Specific example, this man has 100 children, yet none of them are willing to give him a proper burial.
Yeah.
So to me, the phrase proper burial here speaks back to the nature of the man, because even though he has a great family and it's large and all of these things, when he dies, none of them think enough of him to give him a burial.
Yeah.
So in this particular verse, I think that's the way the proper burial is supposed to be viewed. It's in the context of this man has all these relatives, but none of them care enough about him to give him a burial.
Yeah.
So I think those two have to go together.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Plus,
good point.
If you live to be 2,000 years old, all your relatives are dead.
In verse 7, Solomon repeats the thought from verse 10 that we will that we will not be satisfied when we try to fulfill all of our desires. So what does Solomon say about desire versus contentment in verses 8 and 9? What does Solomon say about desire versus contentment? Why are we doing what?
Right before lunch.
Oh. Hey, don't shoot the messenger. Anybody have a comment about contentment versus desire?
Solomon says that the poor man is happy with what he sees in front of him, and he doesn't think about all the things that he's missing and whoa, me.
Right.
I don't get all the things that I'm missing.
Yeah. If you don't have it or never had it, then you won't miss it. But what does verse 9 say? Look at verse 9. And this is New Living Translation here. Enjoy what you have rather than desiring what you don't have, which is what Deborah's talking about. Just dreaming about nice things is meaningless, like chasing the wind. So.
So who does chase the wind other than sailors?
Wayne. Well, he's a sailor. So number 19, why do you think there's so much emphasis on the danger of money? Why do we talk about the evil, quote unquote, of money so much?
That's what people fuss and argue about.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how we measure success, don't we? Our money, our things, whatever.
Also, if you consider Solomon, he did not ask for great wealth when he was had the choice to ask God, what do you want?
Yeah.
And yet, he got great wealth. And I think he experienced through that also what a temptation it is.
Yeah.
He didn't even seek for it.
No.
All he had it.
He asked for wisdom.
Yeah.
So as God blessed him, he had the wisdom to know what to do with that wealth. So.
And that, I mean, so certainly he is one that can talk a lot about the struggles of great wealth.
Yeah.
And probably the greatest of ever.
Yeah. Kevin, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I think money competes for where we, for our devotion.
Yeah.
For our dependence.
Yeah.
And my God, I believe God wants us to depend on Him. And money is a very alluring thing that we get caught up in depending on.
Yeah.
And our, even our currency has an oxymoron on it. It says,
in God we trust, yeah.
Do we really trust
Him? Yeah. Jim, do you have your hand up? Okay, Shane.
I was just gonna draw back to the sermon topic today about the difference between freedom and slavery, and I think a lot of in this particular section of Ecclesiastes that we're looking at, what we see here is Solomon warning us that, because a lot of times we think money is a source of freedom.
Yeah.
Right. We think that, but what I see here in Ecclesiastes in this section is really Solomon saying, no, money is a trap. Money is a slave driver.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth is going to take you to your grave worrying about more and more and more money. And so when I look at this particular section of Ecclesiastes, it really is money is not freedom. Money is a slave driver.
Yeah.
And we can become addicted to that slave driver, and it's not going to make us happy.
Yeah.
And back to the sermon, only the freedom that we find in the contentment of what God provides in His love and through Jesus, that is what we see.
Right.
Not the slave driver money becomes and ruins our lives.
Right. Jim?
Reminds me of Jesus telling the parable about the rich young ruler about mm-hmm. what you need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do everything except.
Yeah.
Give up all his
money. So what did he do?
Ran away
sadly. So.
This might be political, but I think the whole pandemic was because of greed for money. I think that whole thing was caused by that. I don't agree with that, but I think that.
I'm sure there was some greed in it. I'm not going to say 100% of it, but a lot of it.
Very rich.
Most of the evils that we find in this world, though, even in back here and now, are caused by some form of greed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
The rich young ruler went away sorrowful.
Didn't say he didn't do it.
He didn't say that he didn't go and do that.
Yeah.
Because a person can be sad if that's what they know they need to do, but they do it anyway.
Yeah. Number 20. With what perspective does God want us to view our possessions? We've kind of touched on that.
They're meaningless.
Can't take them with you.
Well, they belong to Him.
That, exactly. We're just stewards. We're just stewards. So why is money and material possessions or acquisitions unable to bring happiness or contentment? What's the big word? Vanity?
Man-made.
They're meaningless. So Solomon says not to be surprised when you see the oppression of the poor or the perversion of justice and righteousness. Remember that everyone answers to someone higher. He also observes the proper use of riches. Riches do not satisfy and can be the source of much anxiety. It is fitting to enjoy the good in one's labor, but the ability to enjoy it is a gift from God. Solomon concludes by telling us that man's labor might feed his mouth, but it does not really satisfy the soul. By asking who knows what is good in this short life and who can tell what will happen in this life after we are gone, the preacher implies that only God and not the accumulation of wealth provides the answer to the vanity of life under the sun. Any questions, comments about what we've talked about today? John?
I think money is just another synonym for addiction.
Could be.
And even though I haven't ever smoked or been a drug addict or whatever, I do have addictions in my life.
Yeah.
And it's the same as money.
Yeah.
Whatever is our weakness, that's where the devil goes out.
Exactly. If that's your button, that's what he's going to go after, isn't he? So, next week we'll look at Ecclesiastes 6:10 verse through 7:13. Again, this is 16 verses. Depending on what time we start next week, I asked you to read these verses ahead of time because, again, we may fly through them. So, Shane has an announcement before that, though. I heard a little story not long ago. After a church service on Sunday morning, Bodie Coburn suddenly announced to his grandpa, Poppy, "I've decided to become a preacher when I grow up." "Well, that's great," Gary said, "but what made you decide that?" "Well," said Bodie, "I have to go to church on Sunday anyway, and I figure it would be more fun to stand up and yell than to sit down and listen."